From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to America's most listened to late-night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Open lines for you later this hour, next hour, star children and star-seated adults, Dr. Richard Boylan with some incredible news just for you. Here's some of the news of the day. Zacharias Moussaoui may be put to death for his role in the 9/11 attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people. This according to a jury. Now, the jury will consider in a second penalty phase that begins on Thursday whether to recommend death or imprisonment for him. The sentencing phase for Moussaoui, who pleaded guilty last year to 6 terror-related conspiracy charges, will involve the testimony of victims' family members, and it's expected to be protracted and highly emotional. The U.S. District Judge overseeing this case will consider the jury's recommendation and ultimately decide whether Moussaoui will be executed or spend the rest of his life in a federal prison. He is the only person to be charged and convicted in relation to the worst act of terrorism ever on U.S. soil. In just a few moments, we'll be going to Peter Lance and talk with him about this incredible situation. Former U.N. Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix says that Iran is at least 5 years away from developing a nuclear bomb, leaving time to peacefully negotiate a settlement. I hope he's right, because if he's wrong, even by a few years, we've got some problems. Blix, attending an energy conference in Western Norway, said he doubted the U.S. would resort to invading Iran. The death toll expected to rise after severe thunderstorms packed with tornadoes and softball-sized hail tore through 6 Midwestern states, leaving at least 27 people dead. In Western Tennessee, 23 deaths were reported. In Missouri, strong winds were blamed at least 3 deaths. A clothing store collapsed in southern Illinois, killing one man. My son-in-law was jogging in a park where one of the 3 people in Missouri died. A tree fell on this person, a 20-year-old. My son-in-law was there moments before the storm. Then it hit. He decided to take refuge under some canopies. And then as that portion of the storm died down, he got out of there fast. And this was a fast-moving storm. A tree fell somewhere down the line and killed the 20-year-old man who was out there in that park at the same time. The U.S. Capitol was evacuated shortly after noon after it lost power. Electricity was restored about half an hour later. Officials decided to keep the building evacuated until they figured out exactly what was going on. Peter Lance is a 5-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, now working as a screenwriter and a novelist. We turn to him a lot when it comes to some of these Middle Eastern stories. And we've got another one, of course, on the Zacharias Moussaoui situation. So in a moment, we will go live to Peter Lance on Coast to Coast AM. Peter Lance is a 5-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, now working as a screenwriter and novelist. In 1981, Peter became investigative correspondent for ABC News. He was also a member of the first American crew into Indochina after the end of the Vietnam War. He chased rebel insurgents through Laos and members of the Gambino family through the toxic wastelands of New Jersey. He tracked knife-happy surgeons in the Deep South and nuclear terrorists through the twisted streets of Antwerp. Following the 9/11 attacks, Lance began investigating the origins of the FBI's original probe of the World Trade Center bomber, Ramzi Ahmed Yusuf. He's our guest this half hour on Coast to Coast. Peter, welcome back. How are you?
Great to be back, George. In fact, last week I chased a retired FBI agent through the streets of Brooklyn. He was indicted on 4 counts of homicide. I think we're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks. DeVecchio.
Absolutely. Monday, April 17th, you'll be a special guest for the entire program, Peter.
Looking forward to it.
This situation with Zacharias Moussaoui, where he, of course, pled guilty to 6 terror-related charges, a jury now deciding that he is eligible for the death penalty, and they're going to make that decision this week. I think he'll probably get it. What's your gut tell you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he himself essentially committed suicide on the stand. in defiance of his own defense attorneys, basically admitted more or less that it, you know, that he was in the middle of the 9/11 plot, that the White House was one of his targets. And clearly what they had to prove was that if he had cooperated with the FBI, lives could have been saved, and the jury believed that's exactly what could have happened. But what this says, George, this Massawi penalty phase is so much more damning of the FBI itself, because the testimony in the last 2 weeks during that trial, the top agent in the Bureau, Michael Antisev, admittedly the top Al-Qaeda expert, showed how little the FBI knew about and knows to this day about Al-Qaeda, and worse, what the obstructionism that happened in the weeks prior to 9/11 is just astounding, and it was admitted by their own agents on the stand.
It does not answer the questions of whether officials in government knew that there was going to be this terrorist attack and they decided to just turn their cheek and let it happen.
Right.
Musari didn't say anything like that. Was there anything really dramatic that came out of his testimony other than the fact that he claimed to be the fifth pilot that was going to hit the White House?
Well, George, I think one of the most dramatic things came when he pled guilty several months ago. And at that time, he said one of his primary motivating factors was Blind Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. And as you know, in the two books that I've written, I've always said that not only were the two attacks on the World Trade Center directly funded and tightly controlled by bin Laden, but that Sheikh Rahman was the spiritual center of them. That the Sheikh is what relates us to the Abel Danger case that we've discussed so many times. The Blind Sheikh is the key. And here is this guy admitting that the Sheikh was essentially his spiritual icon.
So with all this coming down with Musawi, where does this put the 9/11 investigation? I mean, in your opinion, is it laid to rest? There's still so many questions that remain unanswered, Peter.
No, George, what if I can say this in 30 seconds, this indictment of R. Lindley DeVecchio, former supervisory special agent for the Bureau, the man they call Mr. Organized Crime, he was indicted by a very courageous DA, Joe Hines, on last Thursday on 4 counts of second-degree homicide. If that case is followed down, we will have a reopening of the 9/11 investigation. And the reason I say that is I showed in Cover Up, the book that I wrote in 2004, which specifically tells the story of DeVecchio. It tells how in 1996, DeVecchio's main top echelon informant, Gregory Scarpa Sr., who was a killer for the Colombo crime family, his son was on the same floor as Ramzi Youssef, the World Trade Center bomber, the mastermind of 9/11, right? And we showed how the Bureau buried extraordinary evidence that could have prevented the 9/11 plot. That's what I wrote about in Cover Up, okay? Well, now that was essentially buried. The 9/11 Commission did a laundered version of the story. Just essentially, they buried Greg Scarpa Jr. in the Supermax for 40 years for RICO violation, and they threw away the key. And everybody just figured it's over in the Justice Department, okay? Cover up, all the nails are in the coffin, it's over. Well, guess what? Last week, when they indicted this guy, and he was surrounded, by the way, by a phalanx of FBI retired agents who are trying to protect him, and on many of them trying to protect their own reputations, I believe that if it's carried to its full, and if people like Kurt Weldon, the congressman from Pennsylvania who pushed so hard on Abel Danger, begin to crack away, we will find the truth. And they said in court last week that Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, the chief FBI oversight man on the Hill, is now looking at this. Grassley is the man who looked at my first book, 1,000 Years for Revenge, and called it a must-read for anyone in the FBI, Congress, and the 9/11 Commission. I believe, George, there's light now, massive light at the end of this tunnel, and we could drive a Mack truck through it if the American public is angry enough and pushes their Congress people to do so.
Okay, but what do you think, if a reopening occurs of the 9/11 investigation based on this indictment, and now he's not been convicted, and I want everybody to know that.
Absolutely.
But based on the indictment, what do you mean by it could reopen the 9/11 investigation? In what direction?
Well, in this respect, I always say, George, in this case, all roads lead back to Brooklyn. The Abel Danger investigation was an example of how a unit of the Defense Intelligence Agency found probative evidence in 1999, December into 2000, of direct Al-Qaeda connections between bin Laden and the Blind Sheikh cell in New York, which included Ramzi Youssef. That's documented, okay? And I had a link chart in my book done by the main Abel Danger link chart maker, Jacob Boson, that proved it, okay? Congressman Weldon tried to, as you know, we talked about it many times, tried to open that, and they buried him last month. They had a hearing on Capitol Hill, his own committee, House Armed Services. This administration, the current Bush 43 administration, buried a scandal on Clinton's watch. So that looked like it was over. But here's the key. Dietrich Snell is the former assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District who went on to the 9/11 Commission, who pushed the origin of the plot forward 2 years solely on the word of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and essentially distorted the truth behind 9/11. Dietrich Snell is a key player in this DeVecchio investigation because Dietrich Snell was the assistant U.S. attorney along with Patrick Fitzgerald, by the way, who is the head of the CIA leak probe, Patrick right. Fitzgerald and Valerie Caproni, who is general counsel today to the FBI. These three heavyweights from the Justice Department were all a party to this cover-up of crucial al-Qaeda information that relates to Gregory Scarpa Jr. This investigation by the DA relates directly to Greg Scarpa Sr. and this allegedly corrupt agent DeVecchio. So here's the deal. Why does Peter Lance say in his book Cover Up that the feds buried this al-Qaeda information, including links to the crash of TWA-800 between al-Qaeda and TWA-800? Why would the Justice Department and the FBI do that? In order to bury the DeVecchio scandal. It would have been a bigger scandal than Ruby Ridge or Waco that Mr. Organized Crime, DeVecchio, their lead guy on organized crime, was in a corrupt relationship with Scarpa Sr. So they basically had a two-year OPR investigation, George, on this thing. Three separate FBI agents came forward and gave evidence on DeVecchio, and it looked like they were going to get to the truth. And they decided, and I have a memo, a smoking gun memo in cover-up, they decided in April of 96, 2 months before TWA went down, that they were going to bury it to preserve 60 mafia cases in the Eastern District, okay? Well, they thought they had that buried. Now Joe Hines took this new information, some of which was in cover-up, and I have to say that I contributed to some degree. A courageous and a forensic investigator named Angela Clemente contributed, and in fact, they reopened the case. Do you know how gutsy it is for a local prosecutor to have gone after one of the most senior FBI agents in the New York office of the FBI?
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
George, so if this thing is followed out to its nth degree, and if DeVecchio has, and by the way, in the past, DeVecchio has threatened to turn in those above him. When they threatened him the first time with the prosecution, he said, I was sanctioned at the highest levels of the FBI. What does that mean? Does that mean just the New York office, or could there be Washington people involved? Is he going to fall on the sword himself? I don't think so. So what we're getting at here is a real legal way now. You understand the 9/11 Commission was this official body with subpoena power, but the fix was in. Democrats and Republicans across three administrations decided to tell part of the story. Why? To cover up years and years of negligence, okay? And now here's this independent prosecutor, Charles Joe Hines in Brooklyn, with Noel Downey, an incredible head of his rackets bureau, Mike Vecchione, really gutsy lawyers, are now willing to take on the Justice Department and the FBI to get the truth. I think it's going to happen.
Peter, will this DeVecchio case satisfy the hunger of the 9/11 conspiracy theorists who believe that there was another job, an inside job?
I believe, and by the way, when I say, remember, Joe Hines' investigation is all he has to prove are those four murder counts. Joe Hines is not going to, on his own, reopen the 9/11 investigation. But what I'm saying is, I believe that this was going to allow people like Grassley and others on Capitol Hill, men of conscience, to reopen the investigation. I believe here's what it will prove, George. At a minimum, it will prove that there was obstruction of justice at the highest levels of the Justice Department during Clinton's administration, among officials who still work for this administration. Now, that is a scandal of monumental proportions because
sure.
These are lawmakers who put other people in jail. And one of them, I believe, who's going to be shown to have obstructed justice, I'll say this on your program, I said it before, is Patrick Fitzgerald. He was the head of organized crime and terrorism in the Southern District. He's the man that indicted Scooter Libby. He's the guy, the aide to Dick Cheney. He's the man who put Judy Miller in jail for all those months. And Patrick Fitzgerald, who has become kind of a liberal icon post the Libby indictment, and Vanity Fair had a huge story on him, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald has a lot of explaining to do, as does Dietrich Snell and as does Valerie Caproni. So this is a democracy. We're a nation of laws, not of men, right, or women. And the point is, if we follow this, if guys like Grassley have the guts to follow this out to its full conclusion, we will get at least part of the truth on 9/11. And if we get people in the Justice Department indicted or accused where they have to defend themselves on obstruction of justice charges, maybe then it will open up. Remember, George, how do they solve crimes? How does a guy like Hines solve a crime? He gets a guy on a lower charge, a lower-level member of a conspiracy. He indicts them, and then they trade up, right?
And the guy talks like Bird.
Exactly, right? So they'll flip a guy. And it's clear that there are some significant witnesses in this case. So in this case, if we focus on the 9/11 investigation and people like Snell are made to testify, now, very quickly, in mid-February, when Kurt Weldon, a courageous congressman, helped try to get this hearing, yet half the members of Congress signed a letter to get to the truth behind Able Danger. The day of the hearing, it was a dog and pony show. They humiliated Kurt. They had him sit in the frontier. Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, this decorated Bronze Star winner, was called Mr. Schaefer on the witness list, and they basically covered it up. Then they went into closed-door session, and they basically humiliated Kurt, okay? Kurt is not going to let this go. Grassley is not going to let this go. And I believe, and these are Republicans, but they're American patriots who believe in our country. I think if this thing goes all the way, we're going to get to the truth. I don't know if I'll ever satisfy the Alex, Joneses of the world,
right,
but I think we're certainly going to get to the truth with respect to what I've been digging at. And, you know, I want to thank John Berger. There's an incredible researcher that I'm working on for my new book called Triple Cross. It's all about Ali Mohammed, as you know, the Al-Qaeda spy. John Berger is one of the top investigative reporters in the country. He has a website, intelwire.com, and John is working with me very closely on this new book. The National Geographic Channel that did Inside 9/11, George, since last we spoke, they're doing a two-hour documentary on my new book, Triple Cross, which is all going to come out in September, and we're going to have some revelations that even George Norrie, I think, will be impressed by.
Well, Peter, will we also find out why we are not really making a concerted effort to chase down Osama bin Laden? Will this come out?
You know something? I've always said I took a little piece of this puzzle, and that is I focused on the FBI and the Justice Department. I didn't look at the CIA or the NSA because they're too vast and they're mostly in the black. I looked at what I could look at, which is those cases in the Southern District in New York. The two bin Laden offices of origin, okay, which were the New York office of the FBI and the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, which produced, by the way, Louis Free, Patrick Fitzgerald, Dietrich Snell, Andrew McCarthy, James Comey, prosecutors like that. I believe we will find out in the pursuit of this by focusing on the Southern District and the NYO, the FBI, we'll find out how much our government knew. What was the prior knowledge on 9/11? How much did they really know? George, there isn't a doubt in my mind that they not only could have stopped 9/11 in the Southern District of New York, they could have stopped the original World Trade Center bombing in 1993. And we will find out why they didn't. We'll have a definitive record of that. It won't just be my book, speculating on it in the best circumstantial case I've made in these last two books, but we'll have the truth. Maybe people will be made to testify under oath, and we'll get to the truth. And I believe, well, then we'll find out why we haven't gotten bin Laden. We got to the moon. We can't find bin Laden. Come on, George.
Well, I hope we find out whether it was just gross negligence or some kind of
intent.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
But we
That's
need to find
goal.
Out. We That's... need to find out, Peter. We need to find out as a nation if it was just, again, intent or just being stupid.
Well, let me just say this one thing. That's the purpose of my final book. I hope it's my final book on 9/11. Triple Cross, my new book that I'm working on, the reason we're focusing on Ali Mohammed, this incredible Al-Qaeda spy who infiltrated the Defense Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and the FBI. He ate our lunch for like 12 years, this guy. Brilliant. And he's a one-man 9/11 commission. He has not yet been sentenced. They're buried him somewhere. We don't know where he is. And if we could get Ali Mohammed to come out, and if he was protected and could testify under oath, we would know more about the negligence or intent of our Justice Department and FBI than a dozen 9/11 commissions. And it's my hope that I can get to him. I've been in touch with his attorneys and other people close to him, and it's my hope that we're going to get to hear from Ali Mohammed. If we do, George, believe me, and this man is the guy who moved bin Laden in and out of Afghanistan. He was his trusted, he trained his bodyguard. He's the man that was there when Black Hawk Down went down in Somalia. He scouted the African embassies, and he trained the original World Trade Center bombing cell. He is the enigma, the true enigma behind 9/11, and it's my job in this current book, Triple Cross, working with people like John Berger to get to that truth.
I'll see you on April 17th, Peter.
Looking forward to it.
And when I come back, open lines. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, you become part of the program with open lines. Some strange stories here. Listen to this one. In the United Kingdom, picture this. A woman, she's opening up a bag of broccoli, and she finds a live snake inside of it. Oh, her name's Tina Cosby. She was preparing tea for her family when she spotted the foot-long gray and black snake curled around the veggies. According to a newspaper, I took out the bag, she says, and put it on my kitchen worktop while I untied it. I was about to put my hand in there to pull out the broccoli when suddenly I saw the snake inside. Its beady eyes opened, and I threw a fit. It was staring at me. Its little tongue was poking in and out. Experts believe it is a non-venomous horseshoe snake that does bite humans, leaving teeth marks and a characteristic horseshoe shape. What did they do? Well, they simply sent her an apology, the store that she bought this in, and a little voucher to buy some more veggies. A Dutch inventor has developed a digital gravestone with an LCD display showing pictures and films. The tombstone has an infrared sense that activates the display when somebody stands in front of the grave. The screen lights up with messages from the deceased, along with videos and pictures. Now, the inventor, 65 years old, he came up with the idea after he made a DVD of his own life to show at his own birthday party. Email in from John says, George, I've got to tell you, when I was listening to you and Lou Gentile last night and talking about EVPs, well, later my wife woke me up out of a screaming nightmare filled with demons and some black garbled voices and creatures who wanted to do me harm. It was terrifying, to say the least. She won't let me listen to demon shows anymore. What am I going to do? Well, a suggestion. Once she falls to sleep, sneak into the room and listen to the demon shows, because we've got more of those coming. Aliens will be talking to us, they say, within the next 20 years, according to scientists. Dr. Seth Shostak, you know Seth, of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI, says that we will not be alone between the years 2020 and 2025. This will be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, story of all time. He says, of course, SETI is building 350 new telescopes to listen for ETs. Lots of people have been emailing me this incredible story that they simply say, we are going to be on to history. What will happen is on Wednesday, the 5th of April, at 1:02:03 on the 4th, April, on the 5th day of the sixth year, it will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And what does that all mean? I don't know. Maybe we'll have to talk to Glynis McCants, our numbers lady, about that. And also, I got an email today from someone who says, George, your book is for sale now on Amazon.com. And I went, what? It doesn't come out until September. What have I missed here? Sure enough, Amazon.com is selling the book before it's even released, anticipating that this is going to be a huge bestseller. It's kind of nice to know. The book, of course, written by me and my co-author, William Burns. It's called Worker in the Light. Lex is kind enough to put a link on the coasttocoastam.com website that will take you there if you want to take a look at it. And I've been getting emails from a lot of you who want to know about signed copies of this book, even though it doesn't come out until September. I'm going to be on a book tour. I don't know exactly all the cities, but if you get your book and I'm in your city, just show up with it. I'll sign it for you. Also, what we'll do eventually when you get your book, just send me an email and just tell me what you'd like me to sign. I'll do it on a separate card for you, and you can just glue it to the inside flap of the book And there you'll have it. You'll have a signed copy that way. And I hope you enjoy it. The book's called Worker in the Light. And what I had promised, by the way, and I have a list from a number of needy coast-to-coast listeners, this is something I'm doing on my own, not through the network. I'm taking a portion of my own proceeds, and I'm sending them back to needy coast-to-coast listeners. It's just something that I feel very important to do. And also special thanks to my co-author, William Burns, who William took all my thoughts and my notes and some of my writings and put them into the phrases that he thought would work. And it was a great partnership. So it'll be out in September, but somehow Amazon.com thinks it's time to take orders now. So that's what they're doing. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. To the phones we go. First-time caller line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Todd. I'm calling from Kingman, Arizona.
Sure. Welcome to the program. Likewise, Todd.
I was calling because of the DeVecchio thing. I thought that was absolutely shocking, if that is true. But I had my own thoughts upon that day myself and kind of kept them to myself because I don't want anybody thinking I'm nuts, as it were. But if I'm off a minute or two, you'll forgive me if I may.
All right.
The first tower was hit approximately 9:01, if I remember correctly. Second one's hit at 9:13, 9:14, maybe 9:16, but about 15 minutes, I believe.
Right.
And then the other two planes, you know, the Pentagon and the White House one, et cetera, you know, within 20, 30 minutes after that. And my thought is, you know, you're a five-star general in Norfolk, Virginia or somewhere, and you've got these F-22s at your disposal. It's your responsibility to scramble them in time of emergency, and nothing happens. And they said that, well, we thought a small plane hit the tower, and that can't be because these planes all carry their transponders. The towers, wherever they were controlling these planes, had to be having trouble with communication with these planes. I mean, red flags went up all over the place, and I don't see any F-22s out, you know, running around chasing these things down and seeing what's actually going on, except the White House one, which I think actually we shot down.
I believe that too. You know, I don't want to take away from the heroes aboard that plane. I'm sure they tried to do what they had to do, but at the same time, that plane had to be shot down. The debris scattered over 8 miles. You don't get that in an impact plane crash. That just doesn't happen.
That is correct. I mean, it was blown apart and spread as it dissipated and fell to the earth. And not to detract anything, because I'm sure people, if they were aware of what's going on, and they were supposedly with their cell phones and things, they would do what they could, knowing death is imminent. But I just do not believe that you know they did that. That it went into the ground. We shot it down. And I just, you know, you're like I said, you're a five-star general. Your responsibilities are to scramble those planes and to pay attention to your secretary. And I don't see something went extremely wrong.
Oh my God, what would happen if the Chinese or the Russians or somebody sent planes over the United States to bomb us? Would we have the kind of response that we had during 9/11 and that was nothing? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, in that case, I think you're talking domestic versus, you know, wartime. If those aircraft are coming over, I don't want to talk about the movie Red Dawn, you know, and the cargo planes, but if those planes were coming over, I think you'd obviously have an aggressive military response. But the domestic one's a tough situation, but yet they had to know. And I just think we shot the one down you had to. There was no choice. You can't let it hit the White House.
All of us as Americans, Todd, deserve to have a new full investigation. If just the questions from our past guest, David Ray Griffin, would be answered, those 15 questions that he says, look, these things were not looked into properly by the 9/11 Commission, we'd get most of our answers. Why did Building 7 come down? Issues like that. I think we really need to open it up again and do a more thorough job. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from? Where are you?
I'm Kathy, and I'm from Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Hi, Kathy. What's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I listened to all this 9/11 stuff, and I've been kind of aware that there's some sort of conspiracy going on. But I wonder if the American people are aware of a law that was passed, or an act that was passed in 2000, it's called NASARA, the National Economic Security and Reformation Act.
And what will that do?
That will have forgiveness of credit card and mortgage debts and abolishes the IRS because, truthfully, the IRS, the 16th Amendment, was never ratified by any states. So it's really illegal for them to take.
Well, it was ratified by some states, but not all the states.
Only two, but it needed to be, you know, ratified by more. And so this all this time, and they'll tell you that it's legal for them to do that because they can do an excise tax. An excise tax is not income tax. But anyway, it gets rid of that. The present administration would be made to step down, and then the constitutional law would put in the right people that are elected. The Federal Reserve would be replaced by U.S. Treasury notes, which were the original in the Constitution. Federal Reserve is owned by companies. The American people, you know, you're part of the...
Well, they're owned by banks.
What?
They're owned by the banks.
No, they're owned by private people. The big people money all through the world.
The Federal Reserve is owned by banks, some of which might be private banks.
Yeah, some and foreign banks.
Not just people.
And but big businesses run it, and there's no backup. And then that means that the Treasury Reserve would be backed by precious metals.
Okay, well, here's my take on this. You bring up some interesting things. You've already been wrong on two of those issues. And you need to go back, do a little more homework, and call us back again at another time, and then slam us with some great information, okay? Because what happens is people who don't agree with you are going to sense a couple holes that you just mentioned, and they're going to kill your argument. So go back, do a little more homework into some of those issues, because you're looking at a big picture, and you're seeing a big picture. But if you throw us facts that aren't accurate, you're going to get blown up on that. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, this is Chris from Colorado. Nice to talk to you, George.
Thanks, Chris.
I think I had an encounter with an angel about 5 years ago.
That's a good thing. What happened?
Well, I was driving home from Arizona late one night, and it was actually like almost morning. It was about 6 o'clock, and I started falling asleep, and I didn't realize I was off the road until somebody grabbed my hand and pulled me back on the road as I was driving.
Did you see the hand?
No, I was asleep. I felt it, though. I was kind of asleep and I was kind of awake, but I felt somebody grab my hand and pull it back onto the road.
Had that not happened, Chris, what would happen?
There was a post about 15 or 20 feet ahead of me when I woke up. And
oh
I was
God.
On the road, but it was like 15 to 20 feet ahead of me. And at the time before, when I was in the ditch, I would have hit it if somebody wouldn't have grabbed the wheel.
I got a call from a truck driver who had a similar story that he was going right off a cliff and he had fallen asleep and a hand reached in and pulled the whole cab back in the trailer and saved his life. He was convinced it was his guardian angel.
Well, that's what I think this was, too, because after I pulled over, I rested for a few minutes and closed my eyes, and then I, about 5 minutes into my little nap, I rolled over and looked out the window, and I saw a man walking toward the car, and he came up to the window, because my window was down, and he asked me for some water, and I was like, all I have is this Gatorade, do you want that?
Yeah, and you're probably in shock.
Yeah, and he took it, and he just drank, like, the whole thing. And
so we know angels are thirsty.
Yeah. I've been told they can take on human forms if necessary.
I don't know if you remember the old Disney movie called The Nine Lives of Elphego Baca. Do you remember that? Were you young? You old enough to remember that? All right. Well, anyways, it was a guy who had nine lives like a cat. You know, they say how a cat has nine lives. How many do you think you've used up now?
Probably about three.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a few more. Make sure you're counting accurately. You don't want to miss those. East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is John from Springfield, Illinois, WTAX.
Sure thing.
How'd you like those storms last night?
Oh, well, first of all, a 100-foot tree went right by the home that I have here in St. Louis.
Wow.
And then I was telling you the story about my son-in-law is jogging in a park. And this stuff is happening. So he goes underneath a canopy, and he's out of the rain. But apparently in that park he was jogging, a tree falls and kills a 20-year-old.
Yeah, there was like a 21-foot boat that was blown into the side of a house about eight blocks away.
At where, Lakes Springfield?
Right off of, well, actually, it was right off of Wabash. It was, the boat was on Lake Springfield, yes.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of stores here that talk about the cashless society. They're using thumbprint scanners now. No cash. Just walk up, do the, and they check you out, put your thumb down, and then you walk off.
Already?
Already. There's two stores here in town in Springfield.
I would assume the people need to register their accounts based on their thumbprint, right?
Right. It goes to somebody to their checking accounts. But they
and
just walk.
People are doing it, though? They're signing up for this?
Oh, lots of them. Yes. You have to be a preferred customer to this place.
No, are they getting any special deals because they're
yes,
doing this?
Prices, yes.
Ah, that's how they get us, huh?
I did have a devil dream last night. The last half hour of your show, I fell asleep, and I woke up to the end of the show, and I was having one of those dreams, those nightmares.
Everybody seemed to have last night.
And something about the extreme weather also. Have you noticed there was the average for like January to April was 85 tornadoes. We've already had like four times that amount.
Yeah, we are way over. This is going to be one heck of a year.
And something else I want to say, too, I've had a really bad dream about, I think it's a really bad idea to have so many troops concentrated in one area over in Iraq. I'm for the Iraq war or whatever, but having so many troops, what if Iran just went off and nuked them? What would we do here?
Well, it's a, you know, we've got, though, millions of troops. I mean, we've got a pretty good arsenal of people, but they're scattered all over the place. You might have a point there. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Bill in Las Vegas. It's always
Hello,
a pleasure
Bill.
To talk with you.
Likewise.
Hi. Missed you. I wanted to address a couple of issues you had earlier with your guest. He was talking about conspiracy theories, and of course there are endless conspiracy theories. But I talked with you around November, December last year, and I got friends out in Nellis, and they run some of the spy planes, and I tell you, they got information of what's going on. So it's either being suppressed or repressed. Maybe even the president's being kept in the dark. But it's almost unthinkable that with all the information out there, they don't know where Bin Laden is. And it stinks. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. We got a system or group of people, and maybe it's the Illuminati. Very likely, if they're doing this, and if they're real, but it looks like they're real, and they can put this whole world into a one-world government, and that looks like the agenda if they can just do three other things.
And they would love to bring America down to its knees. They would love to get us in their camp instead of the other way around.
Well, look what they're doing. First thing, one-world economy, integrating United States economy into the world. You know that. Everybody sees that. Well, another thing that is really important is to get everybody on the same wavelength, education-wise. You know, teach everybody the same thing. Teach the minds of the young the same ideas. That way everybody speaks the same language and thinks the same way. And third, the biggie, the one-world religion. That's where they're having trouble, getting a one-world religion. But if they can do it, and it looks like they got footholds in it, there goes the one-world government right into the lap of the whole thing.
Well, and look at the fourth thing, too. Immigration and uprisings throughout the world in different countries just cause chaos and panic until you break down and say, okay, no more borders, don't worry about anything, you can all come and go as you please.
Perfect. One world economy, one world system, one world government. What a scam, you know, and a lot of people see it, but I don't think the United States is going to bow down into this garbage.
Let's hope not.
The United States is way too independent.
Let's hope you're right.
You know, if this is open lines, there's something I wanted to mention out by Art Bell's Way. You know, I live in Las Vegas.
Oh, you were going to talk about that explosion, that bomb that's coming up on June 2nd.
It's June 2nd?
Yep, June 2nd over your Nye County, I think.
Out at the test site?
Yep.
Well, you know, out by Art Bell's Way, over the hump, there's a place by Mount Potosi Summit. It's called Level Canyon Road, and it's a dark sky site. I happen to be an amateur astronomer like Art.
Yep.
I was out there just checking out the sky one night with my binoculars, and they're pretty powerful. They're 1070s. You couldn't have seen this without the binoculars because it was too faint.
What was it? I got 10 seconds.
Clear as day. I saw it in the binoculars, one of those triangles, and this thing was huge. I'm telling you, George, Art saw the same thing. I think he mentioned it numerous times.
I've talked to a number of people who say that those are man-made. They may be based on reverse engineered alien technology, but those huge crafts you're seeing around military facilities are man-made. They're huge cargo things, whatever they may be. I'll be back.